Blog Talk Radio.
On the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas, I'm your co-host, Steve Canine Kim, and joining me from the beautiful city of San Francisco, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. Mr. Montoya, good Monday to you. What an eventful show we have. There's a lot to talk about, from, and I never thought I'd say this, from BKB to Jay-Z on the next round, Gabe.
Yeah, it's... People ask me, like, you know, what do you think of BKB? I'm like, man, it's a whole lot more fights to have to watch. But I got to say, Steve, you know, I've been making my way through this card. It's good. It's very entertaining. We'll get to it more in depth. But a lot of good action this weekend and some flat-out just terrible fights. How you doing?
I'm doing well. We're 2 weeks away from football season. Programming reminder. My new hippie friend, who's changed completely since moving to San Francisco, Gabriel Montoya, is doing Burning Man. Gabe, I don't even know who you are anymore, so next week the co-host, pinch-hitting like Manny Mota, will be David Duenas and yours truly. The week after that is Labor Day night, and folks, I'm just going to be completely honest. My beloved Miami Hurricanes open up the season at Louisville. So there's no way in hell we're going to be doing a show. So we're taking that week off also, and then it'll be back to Gabriel Montoya and Steve Kim. Gabe, I'm just going to say one thing before we get this show started. BKB, do you remember that old Life commercial where that little kid was going to eat that cereal because all the other kids thought, oh, it's too healthy, it's yucky, we don't like it?
Yeah.
Call me Mikey because I like it. I really, really like it. Believe it or not. And so we'll talk about that more later. But let's get started with round number one. It was showtime from the StubHub Center in Carson, California. And quite frankly, folks, it was a buzzkill of a boxing night for the IBF welterweight title. We have a new belt holder, Special K. Kell Brook moves to 33-0 with the majority decision in 12 rounds over Showtime Sean Porter. Your scores, 114-114. 117-111 and 116-112. And the WBC Super Middleweight Championship, that also changed hands. Andre Durrell, the clear-cut 12-round decision over Saki Obika. And for the WBC Lightweight title, Omar Figueroa, he gets back to his crowd-pleasing way, retains the title by stopping the game Daniel Estrada in 9 rounds, running his record to 24-0, scoring his 18th knockout. Gabe, Kell Brook, in my opinion, was not spectacular. He was not special. But here's what I thought. I thought he was the cleaner technician. I thought he held his fundamentals together much better. I thought he did most of the effective work. And Sean Porter, I think it's very simple, and I'm hearing a lot of excuses from that camp about too much holding, the referee didn't do his job. As much as I like them, they got to look inward. I thought they went backwards. I thought they regressed fundamentally and technically. And when it comes down to clean professional punching, and who was the guy doing what they wanted and who was more effective, I think it was clearly Kell Brook. Gabe?
Oh, sorry, the great and terrible mute. I would have to say, Steve, Sean Porter wanted to ask. They asked for a rough-and-tumble fight. The way he comes out, full aggression, kind of like Holyfield with his head, fighting for space, that Kell Brook held him or kind of muffled him on the inside before ripping uppercuts every now and again. That's the fight, that's the geography you asked for. It's Kell Brook that navigated it better. It's kind of very simple style. It's almost Triple G-like in that it's no frills. You know, it's little simple steps with his feet, spare movement, just kind of making you miss by just an inch. When you get in close, manhandling you and taking care of you. It looked a little like Tyson Douglas to me, the way Porter would try to make himself small behind the guard, move his head side to side. But he had no double jab. And because of that, Kell Brook was able to just let his hands go with his jab. And he's very accurate. It's pinpoint. And he was just kind of like Becca Foley would always talk about that. If you're tall, man, just jab tall, and you just stay and keep away from me, and you just slightly move. And he was kind of punching down from on high. And it was the difference in the fight. It was a rough and tumble close fight. I had it like 7-5. But you could swing it other ways, but I didn't have Porter winning. I could see a draw. But I think the right man won. I think that Joe really, he just boxed better, boxed cleaner. And Porter seemed to fall apart in the later stages.
People have said to me, does this prove that Kell Brook has a good chin? And I say unequivocally not. Gabe, the bottom line is Sean Porter never hit him on the chin. Sean Porter flailed away inaccurately the whole night. And outside of a few body shots and a couple of shots that landed on the head, he never threw a straight punch. And I'm going to say it again, what I tweeted out on Saturday night. Two of my favorite John Wooden-isms. Number one, never mistake activity for achievement. And number two, be quick, but don't be in a hurry. And I think those axioms really describe the downfall of Sean Showtime Porter. Porter is a well-conditioned athlete. He is strong as a bull. He's a bull in a china shop. But on this particular night, he was a guy that struggled against Julio Diaz and at times looked like a prospect on his way up to ESPN and not the guy that was able to maul Devin Alexander and the guy that was able to run right through Paulie Malignaggi. And it turned out maybe those two fights were a bit of a mirage. And I think it's very clear. The physical conditioning gave him, you've seen it firsthand, you're up there live and in person in the Bay Area. He works like a football player. I mean, he looks like a guy ready for the NFL Combine, ready to move up a couple of slots in the draft. However, yeah. I do think from a boxing perspective of pure technique, jabbing his way in properly, throwing a short right hand down the pipe, also not overrunning his own attack. I mean, to me, Gabe, he was like a sports car with no brakes. And they can complain about the holding and the grappling, which I don't necessarily disagree with. But, Gabe, a lot of that holding by Kell Brook, in my opinion, was caused by the fact that Sean Porter kept crowding himself and smothered himself
yes.
for much of this evening.
I would agree, you know. He did. He just – there was no reverse, you know. I mean, it's okay to kind of bounce in and out. But there was a shot right at the end of the round, really hard shot by Kell Brook at the end of the first round that I thought really kind of wobbled Sean a little bit. I could be wrong, but towards the later stages of the fight, he did kind of seem like a bit of a concussed fighter to me, just kind of wide in his shots. But even that, like I never saw him work with wide, like leaping shots, like hooks from the outside. He seemed to abandon his game plan and a guy his size, he needs to employ a double jab just to get near. I mean, he's kind of like a Tyson prototype, a smaller version. But that style of fighter, and in this fight, Brook was just a calmer man fighting from the outside. So I didn't see weakness in those fights where he got hurt. I felt that he was the guy that had been through the fire a little bit more than we'd given him credit. He's a big guy, too, the size difference between these two. Kell's more of a natural 47 in terms of his, like, you know, his height and reach and everything, whereas Sean is thicker, like you said, like a running back kind of guy. I don't know. How do you think a rematch happens? Do you think a rematch happens?
No. In talking to Eddie Hearn at the Fight Hotel, who, by the way, is absolutely the tallest promoter currently in the sport, he made it very clear that they're going to have a fight sometime in November. And the name that I'm hearing from a lot of the UK fans is Leonard Bundu, who just recently beat Frankie Gavin. And I asked him, what about the showdown that has been so talked about, the grudge match against Amir Khan? And he said, I will not attempt to make that fight till next summer. Now, here's a wild card, Gabe. I was talking to someone at Zanford Promotions, Sean Secret Service Gibbons, and a gentleman was there on Saturday night by the name of Juan Manuel Marquez. And Sean made it very clear to me, Steve, Marquez saw the fight. He thinks Brooke's a good fighter. This is not about Brooke, but it's clear. Juan Manuel Marquez really has no interest, unless you're going to pay him astronomical money for a fifth go-around with Manny Pacquiao, but he certainly, Gabe, wants a 147-pound title to wrap up what has been a Hall of Fame career. To me, that might be the most immediate money fight if you can work out the logistics. Again, I'm not completely convinced that a guy like Juan Manuel Marquez at this stage of his life At one time, he may have gone to Indonesia to fight Chris John for $30,000. That was about a decade ago. I'm not so sure he's going to the UK. And Eddie Hearn made it very clear. He goes, Steve, if I go to Sheffield now, no matter who we fight in that first fight, we will sell that arena out. And, Gabe, the Amir Khan fight, the British fans are saying, hey, we can go to Wembley Stadium and draw basically a Frotch Groves type of audience. Now, I don't know if that's true, but I think it's certainly a significant draw if you make that fight. So Kell Brook, I don't know if he's a star. I don't know how special he is, Gabe, but he certainly is a legitimate draw in jolly old England.
Well, I think it's – yeah, he is. I mean, they've been building a brand there for a while, and I think we weren't paying attention to him. And I think in some regards, too, him getting hurt, no discredit to the fighters that did it, but I think he was a guy dying on the vine a little bit, you know. He shined. I mean, it wasn't the cleanest win in the world in terms of, you know, like he didn't absolutely – some people called it a domination or that he exposed Porter. But it was a closely contested fight. It was a tough distance fight, which I kind of expected. If it was going to be a stoppage, it was going to be, you know, Porter really being successful in beating down Brooks' insides, but he just wasn't. Although I think Sean did a lot of good early body work. It really just kind of showed their mettle, and I think that Kell's a little stronger and a little bit class above in terms of his boxing skills. It's just, I don't know where to go with him, though. You know, at this point, I think, like you said, he can go home and just kind of make some money and do his thing, and I don't think he needs to be in any danger anytime soon.
All this is for Sean Porter is a loss. That's all it is. I don't like the word exposed. I think it's used too much.
I agree.
But I do think it points out several technical deficiencies that they still need to work on in terms of being a cleaner offensive fighter and being more comfortable in the pocket. Because the one thing I noticed in this fight, not to belabor this point, Sean Porter was all the way outside or he was all the way inside but with no middle ground, and I think that certainly affected him. And I thought Kell Brook, again, his punches were straighter, they were sharper, and I thought they were more accurate. Gabe, Andre Durrell, Saki Obika. I don't know what to say about this fight except it was an absolute mess.
The best thing about that fight was I wasn't there, you know? I wasn't trapped by that live. God, that was awful. It's just, I just hope for Durrell's sake, like, you know, he secured the belt, he gets to move forward, that, you know, it's, one, we don't have to see it yet another time, but that the next matchup is just, you know, favors, you know, more of an action fight. I don't know, who do you blame for how ugly that was? I always seem to blame Bika for rough and tumble stuff.
Well, I think there's two things here. Bika's going to be Bika. He's never been the most skilled guy, very rugged, very tough. And he'll do anything to really survive in there. But second of all, I've been saying this for a couple of years. Gabe, we got to start getting referees like Keith Hughes, who did wonders for the Andre Berto Collazo fight several years ago. In the first round, he basically did something that is revolutionary to today's referees. And you know what that is, Gabe? He enforced the rules. I mean, that's all he did.
Yeah.
He basically said, neither of you guys are going to hold. Clinching is illegal, and I'm going to penalize you guys right away off the bat, no warning. And miraculously, guess what, Gabe? We got clean, effective, professional punching and great action. I think it's a partnership. Number one, we got to stop rewarding fighters who want to stink it out like this. Number two, the referees, again, have to do their job.
Yeah, I thought Porter Brook got a little bit away from Pat Russell, though the fight didn't get ugly. So, you know, it was, but he could have stopped the holding on both sides and made for a better fight, I think. But it's neither here nor there. But, yeah, I, you know, it's interesting because the BKB holding is not really, you know, it's frowned upon. The whole thing is geared towards revving it up. It's almost like arena football for fighting, although one of the fights did have some holding. And Robert Byrd let it go on a little bit long.
You know, the one thing about Durrell, I've always said he's had talent. I want to see what he does now against a more skilled guy. I thought Durrell won the first fight. I thought he was going to win the rematch because, quite frankly, Durrell's athletic. He's long. He's got good speed. And he's very well-schooled with a good amateur background. Against Saki Obika, the only way he was going to lose the fight, if it was a muck-and-grind affair, which it was, and if Bika can land a big overhand right. He is a strong guy. That never happened. Now, Durrell, to me, has always been a more crowd-pleasing version of the two brothers. He's able to stay in the pocket, has a very good right hand, boxes with a lot of confidence. Now Durrell, to me, at 168 is an interesting name because I think athletically He may not be the most durable guy. He still might fade down the stretch. But I want to see what he does against cleaner technicians not named Saki Obika.
Yeah, that should be – I mean, he could be matched tough. I mean, that would be an interesting fight, seeing him, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., or seeing him, you know – I don't know. I mean, we're getting gratuitous Badu Jack, as we'll get to later in the show. maybe we get that. You know? They keep bringing him back and back and back. He's like Jason. So maybe that, a fight like that. You know, I think it's going to have to be somebody. You know, Parabon. It's going to be somebody that's going to have to bring out the action in him. But like you're right, he seems to be the more durable to me of the Durrell brothers. So I'm curious to see how he grows now that he's got a title. Now that he's finally reached that.
Mm-hmm. Gabe, Omar Figueroa, he is beatable, he's vulnerable, but at the very least, he is fun.
Dude, I love him. What a great ending to that fight. He gets this terrible cut. I don't know how, if you guys could really see it, you know, ringside. It was awful. And he goes out there and lands just a Sunday punch, just a perfect right hand, puts the guy down. And just a very professional finish. It was kind of a De La Hoya finish against Vargas. You know, you get your guy hurt, you get him against the ropes, you just unload the kitchen sink on him, and he landed some quality shots in there to finish off. It was very professional. I imagine the cut's going to keep him out for a while. It was a pretty nasty cut. It was bleeding really dark blood. But, man, the guy is just instant great TV. He saved the night, like De La Hoya said.
No, there's no doubt about it. And now the issue is going to be he's at 135, he holds a major belt, and he's made it very clear unless there's a big money fight at lightweight, he's moving up to 140. Now there's two thoughts on that. Number one, is he going to be like Brandon Rios where as he moves up it's a point of diminishing returns because his style is really reliant on being physically stronger and wearing guys down and just being able to punch him in the mouth and basically back him up. Also at 35 is a fight with Jorge Linares, which has been talked about, a big enough fight. I'll say this right now. As vulnerable and as chinny as Jorge Linares is, his overall skill set, his speed, his sharpness, his technique, I think it's a fascinating fight. I would love to see that fight with Omar Figueroa because it's the type of fight where Figueroa could be losing 33 minutes of a 12-round fight, and at the same time, Linares would still be in danger. I'm crossing my fingers that Figueroa Linares comes to fruition.
I mean, he seemed pretty straight up about it right after the fight, though. He's like, look, I'm, you know, nothing against Linares, but I can't make 135 anymore. So I wonder how much money it's going to take for him to take that back.
Yeah.
I'd love to see it, though. I think it's a classic matchup. But I mean, he was, you know, pretty straightforward about it. Like, he didn't, like, you know, go with the Price is Right. He was just like, no, it's just, you know, I'm moving up. So, I mean, I know Golden Boy would want it, but, you know, that also leaves it open for Linares to just fight for it.
Yes, it absolutely does. And the one thing about Omar Figueroa, which I find puzzling, and again, this is Al Haymon being involved, he is a significant draw in Texas. I was there that night when he was on the undercard of Austin Trout, Saul Alvarez, and he brought a very large contingent from his home city, West Laco, which is about an hour 35, I believe, away from San Antonio, if not a little longer. I'm just trying to figure out why they're trying to make him the king of Carson. I mean, here's Texas / San Antonio, which is this robust market for Golden Boy. He hasn't fought there in a while. And I'm just wondering, where's the product development as it relates to Omar Figueroa? He's a local kid, good-looking, fan-friendly style. And I don't care what they announced in terms of the actual paid attendance on Saturday night. They actually said 7,000. Gabe, that was one of the smaller crowds I have ever seen at the StubHub Center in Carson, California. But that was the night of action. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, before we go any further, get to the calls. We have a full phone line here. BKB. Now, I only saw the main event between Brian Vera and Gabriel Rosado. Gabe, I don't know if it was about the fighters, two fan-friendly guys were willing to duke it out. I don't know if it was about the format that really kind of forced these guys to fight. But, Gabe, all the reviews that I'm hearing from fans on Twitter, email, any type of social platform, there is overwhelming support for this edition of BKB. The fans really seem to respond to it.
Man, it's, you know, I have mixed feelings about it. on one level, you're getting guys that, just really fun fights. Yeah, and guys that don't necessarily get a chance, like Anthony Johnson. He's a guy that works up here at the Undisputed Boxing Gym. He's 31. He's got kind of a truncated record. He's just trying to make it, and he's looking for something other than just the club circuit. And these guys seem to be trying to start a league. And so that guy gets a chance. It's kind of weird calling them the champions. It's like the inaugural fight, and everybody gets to be the champion. But I guess, the first guy to win in that division, I guess you are the man. But the fights themselves are really fun. I think the setup's a little weird. The audience is really far away, which is always kind of my complaint about the Staples Center, that it's kind of cavernous, as opposed to the Home Depot Center, where it's a little bowl, and it's like a gladiator, like arena, all kind of with the energy all going down towards the arena. And I think that's kind of weird. I think they should get the audience a little closer. But I like the idea of no ropes, and because it makes both fighters kind of lean in and dig into each other. You see a lot of guys just going to the body, coming upstairs. The Estrada Caminero rematch, arguably like the third round, I believe it is, like one of the best rounds I've ever seen, but the whole fight, you could put it as a candidate for fight of the year. Non-stop punching from two dudes. But then here's the thing, they're like 33 and 35, got a lot of miles on them at 154 pounds. Is that good for them, We saw Brian Vera get stopped in a really, really vicious, vicious fight. It's fun to watch, though, I got to say.
Every other sport, and we're seeing it with the National Football League, where there is this preconceived notion that scoring is good for the game of football. Well, that goes for every sport. And I remember in NBA basketball about 10, 15 years ago, they basically outlawed hand-checking because it was impeding the scoring of the games. And in the National Football League, if you breathe on receivers now downfield, they are now flagging this at an alarming rate. And the preseason games are taking a lot longer, all in the name of offense. Now, in boxing, to me, we haven't done that. And I think it's time that we start going to smaller rings and start enforcing clinching. In other words, enforce the rules to a point where you're not taking away the skill, but you are trying to reward and force a little bit more action. Because when it's all said and done, this is the entertainment business. And based on what I saw of BKB on Saturday, I thought it was very strong. Now, the issue is going to be, are you ever going to get the marquee fighters to participate in this type of format? Well, Gabe, I think it's very simple. Basically, it comes down to money. If you offer enough amount of money and the reward and the incentive is big enough, I don't see why you wouldn't. But at the same time, fighters who are pure boxers, this may not be their cup of tea no matter what you offer them in terms of a paycheck.
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately what it is. What's the prize? What are you offering? And if it's just normal, kind of run-of-the-mill money. I don't know what the purses are, so, it's a good question. I'm trying to set up an interview with these guys.
Well, okay, Rosado got about $90,000 and Vera got $100,000. So basically what this amounted to was a very, very good stay-busy-if-you-can't-get-on-HBO, and it's still better than ESPN money tune-up fight.
I think it's nice to have another outlet for the fighters, and an avenue for, like I said, like a guy like Anthony Johnson who's kind of floating out there and trying to find an opportunity in a tough division, cruiserweight, Pelos Garcia was in a really exciting fight. He came out a winner. That dude, David Estrada, who's been trying to fight, it's a quality fighter. That's what I really enjoyed about that fight was seeing just dudes with all the punches, just kind of hardworking journeymen, and when that wasn't a bad thing, but just a road warrior. Getting it on and giving it their all, dude. You got to see that fight. I haven't made it through all the rest of them, but I can't wait to. I've been just sort of working my way through them.
And
I
Gabe,
thought Robert Garcia
wanna,
was good too.
Gabe, I wonder the Rosado Vera fight, was that about two fighters who simply meshed well like peanut butter and jelly? They belonged in the ring together, and they'd make a good fight regardless of the format. Or did the format force them to accentuate their pure offensive skills and crowd-pleasing tendencies? I want to see more of a sample size, because if that's the standard that they can live up to every single time, Gabe, I'm all in with BKB at that point.
Yeah, it's kind of like a violent sprint, The guys is just, first bell, and they kind of just charge and, go at it. Especially, the Estrada Caminero one, it's like, It reminded me of the early Contenders, at least the way they tried to edit them, like the fights were this you know, desperate affair with time running out, like, constantly, and the guys fighting like it. Like, it kind of took me back a little bit to, like, you know, what the 50s might have been like. Dude's really going at it. And the audience is kind of a trip as you listen to all the different fights. They're kind of vocal and kind of rude at times. Like I said, it's, I don't know how many people are there, and they're kind of far away from the action. So it's weird, but I like it. I'm kind of, you know, again, I always want the fighters to make money.
You know,
it's interesting that Bruce Binko is one of the he's like the executive director of BKB, formerly of Golden Boy.
You know, that whole circular pit, for some reason, it reminded me of that old movie that had that futuristic bent on sports with James Caan. Remember Rollerball? Remember that movie? That's what it kind of reminded me of. And at the end of the round, there wouldn't be a corner, but one of those panels would come down, and the trainers would actually set down stools. And I'm thinking to myself, this is kind of interesting. You know, I'm kind of a traditionalist in certain ways, and I was skeptical of this. I wrote a story saying it's basically a curiosity. We'll see where this goes. I think the next step in terms of the evolution of growing this brand is you just can't do pay-per-view shows. It's too limiting of an audience, even at $30. Now, Bruce Binko told me last week they are working actively to try to get this on regular cable outlets, and it also helps that part of this is funded, Gabe, by DirecTV. And once you have a television entity of that ilk involved, you do have a fighting chance. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's get to the calls.
I guess it comes down to is like how much money do they have? You know, because somebody like an Al Heyman can kind of get in there and, well, let's see. You know, I've got all these fighters. Let's see what's up. It could end up catching on. It's very interesting. In the 702, let's go right to the man. Robert Palmer, you're live on the next round.
Who was in the audience?
What's up, guys?
I saw him.
Yeah.
He does exist, guys. He's not just an avatar on radio. I saw Robert Palmer at the StubHub Center Saturday night.
Yeah, it was just me, Steve. Got him, guys.
Robert, right. The stage is yours.
Yeah, just, I mean, for me, I scored it 116-112 to Brooke from ringside, and then when I watched it back later in the evening on TV, I scored it the same score, but more convincing to Brooke, if that makes sense. I think anyone that scored it to Porter is just not scoring fights correctly. Brooke landed the cleaner shots. He didn't allow Porter to
Then Robert, fight. What is with all these British people that actually thought Sean Porter, I was stunned by that the television broadcast crew of Sky Sports, they were doing doom and gloom from the very beginning. I mean, I thought after five rounds it was 4-1 Special K, and I'm hearing from people across the pond, he goes, Steve, I think the scores are reversed. That was bizarre world to me.
Yeah, because
you know,
go
ahead, Robert.
Let me just clear up. Jim Watt is the Jim Watt, who was a lightweight champion back in the 70s, I think. He does the scoring for the Sky Sports broadcasts, and he scores fights based on what he thinks the judges will score it.
Okay.
So he actually takes into account the bias from the judges. He scored Hey Valuev to Valuev, for example, and then after the fight he explained that was his reason for doing it. And he's done that with other fights before. I think that's stupid, to be honest, but... but what can you do? I think the right man definitely won. Brooke was landing cleaner shots. He didn't allow Porter to fight his fight at all. He was tying him up on the inside. All the aggression from Porter was ineffective for at least seven of the rounds. And there were times where he was actually blocking and slipping a lot of shots, showing a lot of good defense. Brooke definitely won the fight for me. I said before the fight that... Brooke's the better boxer and that Porter's the better athlete, and that the fight would depend on who was the stronger in the other aspect. And I think for me, Brooke definitely proved to be a better athlete than Porter as a boxer. I think,
and I think he also was equally strong too. He was able to withstand, you know, the clinches and move him back, and not be pushed and bullied around. I felt that you know, the first clinch would say a lot. I think it really did, and he just. He's very accurate. I mean, he just it showed that on, you know, even on the top level, we're heading towards the top, wherever you rate Porter. he's going to be a problem. I think he needs to work in body work a little bit more, though. He's just a bit of a headhunter. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's still a lot for Brook to work on. Certainly, he's not the finished article, and this was really his first fight at world level, although I don't think his competition was as bad as people were making out it was before
this fight. I agree.
Fight. I think,
Robert, I remember about 2-3 years ago when he was still really a prospect, and I think he was in my top three. I said, this guy's pretty good. Good all-around skill set. Had been in some tough fights, namely against Carson Jones. What is the perception? What is the viewpoint of his overall ceiling as a prize fighter in the UK?
I think people think that he is a top five welterweight. He's a more than valid belt holder. I think in some ways unfortunate that he's in the best division in boxing, but then his paydays are probably going to replicate that. I mean, the great thing about last night is that you now have a world champion at welterweight that's not associated to Haymon and not associated to Top Rank. So he could go and fight either Mayweather or Pacquiao. I think that's a fight they would want because he does bring that UK pay-per-view money as well to the table, which Hatton needs to bring. It won't be as significant, but it's still a lot of money. And I don't think he would win those fights. I think he would ask questions of both guys. I mean, he has a good enough jab to maybe cause Mayweather some problems. That's what people have always thought about Mayweather. And maybe, just maybe, he catches those guys on the right night where they do just kind of get old overnight. And but I couldn't see it. But even then, he's going to go and make a lot of money. I mean, Maidana and those guys didn't get much for the Mayweather and Pacquiao fights, but you've got a guy with leverage now, so I think he would get well paid for those fights, especially with the UK money as well.
Rob, don't also discount this. He has a real promoter, and Eddie Hearn was a plan, and he understands that crowd on Saturday was an embarrassment in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You go back to Sheffield, whether you're fighting Leonardo Bundu or anyone else, that fight in Sheffield, that's going to do at least 15,000, and they're going to create a certain amount of leverage where Kell Brook will only travel from this point forward if it's worth his while.
Yeah, I think only Mayweather and Pacquiao would get him out of the UK now. I think the Khan fight is a very obvious one to make. The issue with making that now is that there's only one stadium in the UK that's got a roof, and that's not in the same region of the country where Brook and Khan live in. So they might have to wait till the summer because the weather's not good enough for them to do stadium fights outside of the summer months. I think Marquez could possibly be a pay-per-view fight in the UK if he was prepared to come over, but I don't see Marquez coming over because he will get drug tested if he comes to Europe, and I don't see Hearn or Brooks' team putting him in a fight with a fighter now that isn't significantly drug tested, and I'm sorry to say that kind of
I hope so.
Miguel Marquez out of the running.
I hope that's the case. I hope it wasn't just like targeting one guy or like a tactic for just one fight. I hope they make the full commitment, you know?
I think there was maybe a degree of that, but now they will use, I think they would have targeted Marquez as well as Porter, so, you know, that makes sense.
Gabe, I just want to say, in interviewing Eddie Hearn last week at the media day in Carson on that Wednesday, you would make Eddie Hearn your pound-for-pound favorite promoter, because there's a guy who is all in terms of the drug testing, who absolutely positively will put his money where his mouth is as it relates to a fair level playing field in terms of PEDs and its usage in boxing. And so I think there's a guy that'd be proactive in terms of that particular subject. Rob, we got to get going, okay?
Yeah, just quickly, I just want to say, like, I think that Porter was let down by his team, whether that was both Haymon, and also I think his dad let him down to a degree as well. They just didn't have any other tactics in place. And, you know, you can take all the, you can drink all the drinks, you can take all the tablets, you can do push-ups on the moon, but if you don't work on your tactics, you're not going to win fights.
Rob, I think on Saturday night, there's no arguing that point. Mr. Palmer, till next week, we'll talk to you.
Thanks, guys.
347-215-7598. Let us know what you thought of the Showtime fights, and if you watched BKB, thumbs up or thumbs down. Gabe, who's next on the line?
1 second. In the 860, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing? It's CT.
CT! Welcome to the next round.
Hey, what's up? I was actually wrong last week. I picked Porter to stop Brooks, and I just thought the moment was going to get to Brooks. I didn't think he was ready yet, but he definitely proved me wrong. He was a lot more patient and more calmer than Porter through the whole fight. It was like the total opposite, you know what I mean? From round one, he just, everything was natural. He saw Porter punches coming, even the ones that were going around his head, he kind of ducked them. And I agree with the last caller. He just, you know, everything was just pinpoint accuracy. And I think Porter's one of those fighters, almost like a Shane Mosley type fighter. He's very energetic and, you know, doesn't calm down enough to place his punches well. I don't know what was up. And a lot of it had to do with, you know, Kell Brook being his size. He's tall and very physically strong, and he's big for that weight class. He's a big guy. So, and a lot of those shots I saw Porter getting hit with, he had the chin because he was getting hit flush. And those punches were very, especially that 1-2 at the end of round one that Brook caught him with. And I agree with Gabe. I think his son Porter towards the end of the round. I think it was a good performance. I didn't really care too much about the holding, but those are the type of tactics you need to have when somebody's rushing you like that. You kind of got to hold them, push them back, use your physical strength to kind of wear them down. And I think everything Brook was doing that night gave him victory. He fought very smart.
CT, I think it's very simple. I mean, the team Porter may have a point about the clinching, but to play Brook's advocate, if a guy just rushes in and bowls in and overshoots his target and runs into your chest, the natural reaction, even in boxing, is to clinch. And I drew this analogy, and I'll repeat myself. Sean Porter was like a really fast car that had no brakes, and he kept overrunning his target the whole night.
Yeah, I agree.
He made for the awkward fight. There's just no question of it. You know, and Brook had to – I've seen Brook. He wants to box. He wants to keep you in front of him. And, you know, Porter wanted to close that distance, but he didn't work in between. You know, he'd get inside and try to work around the outside to the ribs on both sides. But it wasn't, you know, after, like, the fifth round, it just wasn't that effective anymore. It slowed down, sort of getting caught down the middle and taking ridiculous chances. I don't know what those leaping left hooks were about.
CT, anything else we could do for you?
I just want to talk about who can Brook's possible opponents be. I would love to see him fight Amir Khan. I think he has a storyline there. It's going to be big in the UK. I think style matchups, it will be interesting to see how both guys match against each other. I would like to see him fight Khan or maybe Keith Thurman. I think whoever Kell Brook fights next, he definitely proved that he's up there in the welterweight division. So the only thing is, like you guys are saying, it's going to be a little hard to see who he would come out of the UK to fight. You know, there's interesting fights for him to have, but how many American fighters are going to go over there to fight him or try to get him over here to fight them? You know, that's the only thing you kind of got to worry
about. And Gabe, CT, remember this point. A guy like Keith Thurman, I'd love to see that fight. There's one issue, though. Al Haymon. And Al Haymon, guys, they don't need a passport usually. In other words, they don't travel.
Right.
Yeah, that's. I think, you know, the WBA belt is there. I think Thurman's, you know, he's the number one contender to it. So I think after, you know, Mayweather-Maidana, we're going to see, you know, maybe Floyd vacates and Thurman ends up fighting for a vacant version of that, maybe against Amir Khan. You know, he's got a lot of pieces there. It seems strange to me that you have such a good piece in Keith Thurman and Dry Dock like that. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. But
see, T, anything else we can do for you?
Just one more thing. I would love to see Figueroa, which I think he did the honest thing. You know, he can't make 135, but if he is going to go up to 140, I would love to see him fight John Molina. I think that's an awesome fight.
Ooh, and well, speaking of John Molina, though, he is campaigning his next fight at 140 against Humberto Soto. And trust me, Johnny Molina would have taken that Figueroa fight 3 weeks ago. Trust me, he's wanted that fight for at least a year. And
yes.
Johnny Molina has become the boogeyman for all the rest of the Al Haymon clients. They simply do not want to take the risk of that big raw bone guy from Covina, California. That's why they look back. I really give Lucas Matisse a lot of credit because I'm telling you right now, a guy like Adrian Broner simply didn't want any of that action. And here's Matisse coming off of a loss where he had a broken cheekbone, willingly stepped up. Just put that into perspective. CT, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, Gabriel_Montoya. Steve, UCN Live. Here's one from Evan Young. Guys, Porter is what he is, a very strong and quick mauler. Just met a guy who was able to handle that. Not many at 47 can. Gabe, can you say that you disagree with that?
I'm sorry, Steve. I was writing something down, doing the producer stuff. Can you ask me that again?
Yeah, Evan Young just had a tweet, and I think he hit it spot on. I don't know if you agree with this. He said Porter is what he is, a very strong and quick mauler. Just met a guy who was able to handle that. Not many at 47 can.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's still in the mix. I think he's still a problem for people. He's a physical issue. You know, he wasn't like he got dropped and, oh, my God, he has no chin all of a sudden. He was. Yeah, I think Kell Brook could punch pretty good, and Sean took some flush shots, never gave up, had a lot of energy throughout the fight. No, so I think he's very viable. I don't think many people could deal with him. And you know, to Robert's point too, that, and I've heard a few people say this. Oh, you can do all the Victor Conte stuff that you want to, and you just have to have boxing technique. And I agree, you have to be a good boxer. But I made a video that came out the morning of all these fights, and it's showing Anthony Johnson preparing to fight in the pit by sparring inside the snack dome, which is about the same dimensions. And that guy won, and he's one of the guys that trains all the time doing the snack stuff, and it's kind of like a homegrown product there. He won. So, and the point of the video was a lot of these guys come through, and they do a mini camp. Like Sean did like two mini camps, or I think maybe three mini camps at the most. But he did his whole camp there, and I think there's a difference. And I think Porter's, for them to change, I would suggest having a good old-fashioned training camp. 8 weeks in one spot, focused on the opponent. That's what Kell Brook seemed to do. Porter's could have traveled all over the place doing it their way, and I think maybe they need to look at that going forward.
Here's a tweet from Wessam Almaty. I counted the clinches. Brook initiated yesterday through 12 rounds, and the final count was 140. You know, I'm not disagreeing with that point. Brook did grab and maul a lot, but his dance partner kind of allowed that to take place. And as Teddy Atlas has said for years, it takes two to tango. It also takes two to clinch. And here's one from Andrew V. Kennedy. How disappointing was Porter's performance on Saturday? Also, do we really need to reinvent the wheel, talking about BKB, to get action fights, Gabe?
No, we just have to enforce the rules. No holding, you know, and cut, you know, cut that stuff down. I think Pat Russell was a little slow on the draw. You know, I think he should have taken more control of that fight, and I think Jack Reese would have. I liked Reese, you know, on that evening. He was very, you know, just kind of guiding the fighters almost and making sure that everybody was fighting the way they should. I think it all comes down to matchmaking. I did like what BKB brought to it was production value. They weren't ashamed of their ring card girls. They actually featured them, much like the UFC. They were kind of going in that sort of model. And also removing the ropes and putting them in this arena thing, I mean, where you could just flat out see two dudes fighting. I got to tell you, it's kind of cool. I like it. You know, ropes, you can see everything. I do miss fighting off the ropes, and there's some great comebacks like Jorge Castro, John David Jackson, that, you know, the ropes, you know, or the rope it up itself. The wonderful things happen because of the ropes, but still, removing them, it makes for a very interesting product.
Here's one from Santosh, old friend of ours. Gabe, I know you saw Sean Porter in camp. Is it possible he was overtrained?
I don't think so. I think he just was missing a double jab and a second game plan. You know, and I think he also, if I would observe something, is that he sometimes has lapses. And I remember Ken kind of saying, like, you know, you've got to pay attention and do it right all the time, not just when you want to. And he got caught at the end of that round. I'm not saying the fight was over right then, but he struck me as a guy that was a little punchy or a little punch drunk towards the end of the fight. He'd been concussed a bit early on, and I think that might have been the moment. There was a couple others where he got really caught with a jab coming straight in. So I don't know. I don't think they were overtrained. I think they're always in shape and ready to fight.
Oh, and here's our English. Not our English. I think he's from Ireland. Andy Finlayson, our special correspondent there overseas. He says, guys, I think Brook Bundu happens this year. Bundu deserves a shot with a solid resume. Con Brook summer 2015, which goes in line with what Eddie Hearn told me on Saturday night. 347-215-7598. We'll have some news and notes at the top of the hour. A lot of things going on in the sport of boxing. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
In the 931, rather. You're live on the next round. 931.
Hey, keep calm and sing Rocky Top, people. How you doing?
Hey, we're only a couple weeks away from kickoff here there, Eduardo.
Hey, Rocky Top, baby. Hey, no, listen, gentlemen. I didn't think it was a hug fest like a John Ruiz fight. But I know everybody already touched upon it, but Porter just didn't adjust appropriately, and he used a lot of his energy on misguided aggression. I was very concerned about his lack of adjustment there.
He didn't get around him to the sides. You know, he I saw all that in the video that I, you know, the sparring sessions that I featured, and he didn't really do a lot of that in the fight. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, that worried me a lot. It's, you know, I'm a Porter guy. I like him a lot. He's entertaining. I love the father-son duo. I'm all about that. But do you think it's wrong for me to say that, you know, there's a lot of athletes. There's more athletes than boxers in boxing nowadays. Would it be wrong to say that Porter is just a very strong athlete? Do you think that's wrong, or is it kind of, you know, what do you think?
I think that, you know, he's been fighting the same amount of time that he's been playing football. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can be both.
Okay.
I think it just comes down to styles. I don't think you throw the baby out with the bat. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
just...
I agree. Yeah, he just couldn't out-muscle Brook like he did Paulo Malignaggi or Alexander. No, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, he reminded me of a strong SEC team with a strong defensive line playing a lesser division with a good running game. I mean, he was pounding and pounding for the defensive line. Brook just didn't budge. It was, wow, I thought it was entertaining. I liked the fight.
You know, the one thing that Porter's going to have to work on, because a lot of his fights are going to be about being chest-to-chest on the inside, is being more creative through the side door and working the flanks. Because you guys made a great point. He tried to come through the front door, and the front door was locked, loaded. There was a lot of stuff loaded up where he just was not going to be able to break through. But what a skilled infighter does, they work side to side. They work the angles. They look for openings. They create openings. And Sean Porter, I thought, almost looked desperate that if he couldn't get inside and land something quick, he didn't have a secondary answer or a secondary plan. If you really look at some of your best infighters in the sport of boxing, whether it's Golovkin, Orlando Salido, Antonio Margarito a couple of years ago, or a Chavez, they didn't always work in a straight line on the inside. In fact, they did a great job of creating openings on the flanks. And that's one thing that he's got to develop, because he's always going to be, or usually going to be, guys, the shorter guy inside that squared circle, so he's going to have to learn how to work inside the pocket.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, I agree. And I'm not one of those fraud Mayweather fans who say, oh, because if guy lost, he was exposed or he is nothing. I believe this is going to be a good loss for Porter. I think this is a good loss. I think he'll come back strong. I really do.
Yes.
I did
too. Eduardo, anything else we could do for you?
All I got to say is Rocky Top, Tennessee. Thank you, guys. You got the GOAT. You guys are the best, man.
Thank you. And Robert Palmer has to chime in here. On Twitter, Porter led with the head and landed 80% of punches in the clinch as his hands were free, so not illegal. Very different to Vladimir Klitschko. Gabe, let's get to the fight smith, who's at 714. He's been waiting patiently.
714. Let me scroll down. And boom. You're live on the
hey
next
guys.
Round.
How's it going?
Mr. Fightsmith, welcome to the next round.
Thank you. I missed you at the fight. I think I got a little buzzed by the time I was going to try and say what's up.
You know what? I was buzzed too, so we're even there.
The thing that's nice about talking about fighting or about boxing this weekend is we're talking about fights. I feel like the last couple of weeks we've been talking a lot about the business. And I mean, even though some of the fights weren't as fun as I'd like, I mean, it's still better to be talking about bad fights against evenly matched guys than terrible fights.
You mean the televised executions we had from the Barclays Center on August 9th?
Exactly.
Fight Smith, you were there at the StubHub Center. How did you see Porter Brook from your vantage point?
You know, I was in the the sixth row. I saw Brook winning a fight, a tactical fight, and being the better fighter. Porter just I thought. I mean, I agree with everything you guys have been saying. He kind of came in there like a bull in a china shop, and it didn't work out because Brook did a good job on keeping him away and landing the punches he had to land.
Yeah, he, you know, that's what it comes down to ultimately. Is, you know, one guy wants to do one thing, the other guy wants to do something else, and Brook was able to do something else the whole time, and he had his spots, but I can't think of those moments where, other than some pretty good body work early on, what are the highlight reels of Sean Porter? A lot of it was, you know, it was just few and far between. It was just too little to keep the title. But like you know, the last caller said, I think it's going to be a good win for him. They're smart guys. And I think they're willing to accept, you know, hopefully they're willing to accept why they lost. And
Gabe, we both know them. I really hope that they're honest about this and just don't place the blame on Pat Russell. This is not about the referee. Most of the shortcomings on that night where they lost to Kell Brook, it's about them. And it's going to be distressing to me because Sean Porter and Kenny Porter are people that I really like. If they are honest with themselves, there's an old saying, don't point the finger because three of them come right back at you. Pull the thumb, because if you watch that fight and you really break it down technically, putting aside whatever Pat Russell did or did not do, that was a very, very flawed fight Sean Porter fought this past weekend.
It's true. I think they got to look at it.
I think him taking the loss also is good. I mean, it's good because he's a rising star guy that has a loss on his record now, and hopefully fans will start to look at it a little bit more. I mean, looking at the undefeated thing as the most important thing for boxers, bad for fans because it forces these guys to not take fights that could result in a loss.
You know, another issue is boxing gained a legitimate belt holder that can draw. I mean, you were out there, Mr. Fightsmith.
Yeah.
There couldn't have been more than 3,000 people. That had to be embarrassing in a lot of respects or sickening to Eddie Hearn, whose shows regularly draw twice that amount for non-championship fights. I mean, Sean Porter is your another Heyman guy who's in Ohio who never fights anywhere near the Buckeye State. Somehow this fight landed in Carson, California. Again, when Kell Brook makes his first title defense, I would be willing to bet there's going to be at least five times the amount of people that we saw this weekend.
No question. It's good for the business when people that actually know how to promote a champion have a champion in their stable, you know. And the Hearns are good people, and you're right. I mean, I you know, spoken a bit with Eddie about the issue, and I think they're generally concerned. I think everybody in the sport knows what's up with the anti-doping stuff. So I just hope that their next fight, they should go 365 or they should go to that next level. But, yeah, there's going to be like 20,000 people at that fight. And it's going to be a good action fight, and I think Kell is going to be a problem. Somebody's going to have to convince him to leave England, because he's got, you know, his next fight alone is going to prove that there's no reason for him to come back over here.
And Mr. Fightsmith, I know you wanted to ask me Gennady Golovkin. I was told by Tom Wofford, who would not confirm the opponent, although between you and me, I think it is going to be Marco Antonio Rubio, because quite frankly, they need a Mexican. I believe
Yikes.
It will be October 18th at the StubHub Center in Carson, California. Tom Loeffler said you could tweet it out if you want on Saturday night. So I would trust Mr. Loeffler on that. So book your flight, get your hotel, or make sure you have a full tank of gas that night.
See you there.
All right, absolutely. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
914, you're live on the next round.
What's 914. Going on, guys? First time
caller.
Big fan of both you. HB from New York.
HB, welcome to the next round.
Thank you, thank you. Sure. I just want to know if you guys saw a video. It's not that big, but I feel like it should be. It was of Justin Fortune at his gym. It was an Ellie Sekpak video. I don't think Ellie Sekpak was the one asking questions, but basically he was asked what are his thoughts on PEDs, and Justin Fortune said, if you're top 10 in any sport, you're on it. And I'm thinking this guy is a strength coach for Pacquiao, obviously implying Pacquiao is arguably top 3 in the sport. I mean, I was just sitting there thinking, well, if this is another sport and LeBron James' strength coach said something like that, it just didn't make a lot of sense. can I ask what you guys thought?
Boy, LeBron lost a lot of weight that? This summer, though, hasn't he, HP?
Yeah, he did. He definitely did.
Well, first of all, I'd like to know, HP, I want to know the date of that video, though, because, again, that'll put in the context a lot, though. Remember, Justin's only been back since, what, late October or early October before the Brandon Rios fight, if
link.
I'm not mistaken. Right, Gabe?
Yeah, yeah, treat me that link so I can see. But I've known Justin very well, and I trained at his gym for much of the time that I was in Los Angeles. I think the last 5 years that I was in L.A., it's pretty straightforward about what he thinks about the sport in terms of how dirty it is. But that's a great question, you know. If Kobe's strength coach was like, oh, yeah, the sport's as dirty as they come, at least at the top level, you know what? You know, next question. You know,
Dave, I did a story on PEDs about 8-9 years ago where Justin flat out said, well, I would say at the world-class level of every sport, at least 80 to 90% of the participants are doing something.
Yeah, exactly. One last thing, guys. I'm a young guy. I'm 19, and I live in New York, and I can tell. I'm a huge boxing fan, but MMA is taking over. Once it's legalized in New York, it's going to take off. I know that for a fact, as much as I hate to say it. I'm kind of looking at the numbers of what these guys get paid and, like, major pay-per-view numbers. The main event, they get, like, $150,000 tops. And I'm thinking with these HBO budgets, what they're working with, does HBO have a contract with these promoters? Like, is there any chance of them breaking away from boxing in the future? I know Showtime used to deal with, Strikeforce. Is there any chance of HBO ditching boxing? Is that... That's, like, my biggest fear. I'm just wondering if that can ever be a reality.
Hmm.
You know, Rupert Murdoch is said to be looking to buy HBO. Bill Maher keeps talking about it on his show, which is on hiatus right now, that he'll be the first to go if Rupert Murdoch buys the show or buys the network. And I tend to agree with him, but I also wonder if boxing won't follow it. I mean, is it a viable asset for HBO? Versus a Game of Thrones, you know, what's the budget? What does it cost them? What does it gain them? I don't know. You know, I think that's a valid question. And also things seem to be moving in these other models. You know, you're seeing, like, people kind of going towards more like the digital cable and having, you know, a boxing channel. And you could see different ones started competing with each other on that level, on a subscription basis. I think that's kind of the future. So, you know, and HBO's looking
to actually go
online.
I don't see MMA taking over. I already think it's plateaued. I'm sorry. If you actually look at the raw numbers and the raw data, I think the MMA plateaued about 2-3 years ago. Who's their star now? Honestly, if you look at the actual numbers, boxing still outperforms MMA. And quite frankly, I think it's got a better product. But that's just my opinion. HB, thank you for the call. Let's go to news and notes now, Gabe. Gabe, this here is distressing and disgusting and, quite frankly, even by boxing standards, extremely cynical. Sam Solomon, the IBF champion, who we all thought was in line to fight Gennady Golovkin in a unification bout, will instead be taking on Jermaine Taylor. Gabe, I don't even know what to say at this point. Jermaine Taylor had a brain bleed after the Arthur Abraham fight, and all these people that are now involved are saying, well, he's passed every test. The commissions have green-lighted him. You know what, Gabe? You heard the same thing when Muhammad Ali fought Larry Holmes. I'm sorry. This fight here, in many respects, is a travesty.
Yeah, I just don't understand it. You know, and they brought him back. You know, he fought Caleb Truax, 160.5. The fight after that, Raul Munoz, you know, he knocked him out in two, but, you know, Munoz was not looking too good himself. And then J.C. Candelo. Was his own aging fighter at that point as well, and that wasn't even at the 160 limit. So how is it that, that anybody would allow this to happen? The sanctioning body, the letter commissions, anybody. You know, there are some people that say, you know, he's a grown man and Jermaine Taylor can make his decisions, but, you know, fighting for these world titles, even if you just demand it, like an optional defense, that's an honor and it's something that should be earned. Like, you should have to go through something to get there, not just have used to do, you know, have a title years ago. It's very sad. You add the brain bleed on top of it. The sport's brutal, man. I mean, it's like it's trying to kill itself when it does stuff like this.
There used to be a time if you had a brain bleed, you were automatically disqualified from boxing. I really don't know what changed. And shame on guys like Lou DiBella, who 5 years ago, when after the Abraham knockout happened, and I tweeted this out last week, he said that in good conscience, it is simply too dangerous for Jermaine Taylor to box, and he cannot promote him. He wouldn't do it. What changed? What changed? I know that when you work for Al Haymon, you sell your soul, but this is even more obscene than what is allowable in the sport of boxing. I think everyone who was involved in this event better hope and pray and cross their fingers nothing tragic happens, because if it does, they have blood on their hands. Gabe, Dan Goosen, I guess you can call this the Empire Strikes Back. Late last week, it was found out that he is now suing Andre Ward in a $10 million defamation suit. Well, Dan Goosen finally counterpunched Gabe.
I bet he was wearing a brightly colored suit when he did it, too. just kind of like, you know, holding like a rocks glass, you know, full of something in one hand and just make it happen, you know, and just bam, $10 million lawsuit. Is this round four? I don't, you know, it's, man, this has been the fight of the year, you know, this ongoing battle between Goosen and Ward. And, you know, in all seriousness, I'm curious about Andre Ward's allegations regarding the Ali Act, and you know, just tweeting about it even today, like, you know, there were various people that reached out and were like, look, you know, they don't enforce the Ali Act. Nobody really does. Most of the fighters I've talked to, hey, did you get your Ali Act? You know, your financials and all that stuff. What are you talking about? You know, the fighters sometimes don't know their rights, or they just flat out don't get their thing and they don't ask. So, because they do get their check, which is the most important paper, the only one they're really worried about. So I don't know. We'll see how this is. You know, I also was thinking another Ali Act issue today was, you'll probably get this news and note later, but it seems to be happening all over the place, and I'm wondering if Ward is finally going to put some teeth to the Ali Act. We'll see.
Well, we got to see if he has a valid case. I mean, he's tried several different ways to basically run out and renege on the contract, and he's 0-3. And I think it makes it very clear. I understand they're going to court tomorrow, but Andre Ward in 2014 will have as many professional prize fights as me and you, Gabe, which is to say none. And quite frankly, I think more and more fans really don't give a damn. 347-215-7598 if you want to call in. We'll have some more news and notes in about 15 minutes. Gabe, let's get back to the phone line.
In the 347, you're live on the next round.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, Gabe. Good evening, Steve. How are you guys doing?
Good. Amilcar, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm good, man.
What's up, man?
I wanted to ask you guys, last week I was having some problems with my phone, but I was pretty surprised that you had selected Porter, because normally you guys don't go for boxers who have, like, football backgrounds. So I was wondering why it was in this case you felt that somebody like Porter, who I thought kind of boxed like a bit like Kareem Mayfield in this fight this past weekend.
Oh, geez.
Why you thought he'd be able to beat a pure boxer? I mean, am I way over the line by saying that?
Well, hold on. You're saying he's like Mark Gastel or Ed Too Tall Jones. If you look at the background of Sean Porter, he boxed basically his whole life as he played football. This isn't a football player who at age 21 got cut in the National Football League and said, I don't want to get a real job. Hey, let's try boxing. I don't think that dynamic existed with Showtime Porter.
Yeah, but, I mean, the training that a football player does, especially of a defensive back, which I believe is what he played, and running back.
He was a running
back. I mean, it's kind of the opposite of what a boxer trains. So, I Kell Brook took a lot of criticism for the hole in. I'm not the biggest Kell Brook fan, but Sean Porter was leading with his head a lot, and He was being pretty rough, so I felt that the holding was justified, and I'm somebody who really doesn't like holding. So, yeah, but you guys actually got me to check out that BKB. You didn't have anyone else commenting on it, but I liked it a lot. I was watching it while I was on hold, and it was really exciting, even though I knew who was going to win the fight. I liked the format. I used to live in Central America, and there are a lot of the gyms can't afford actual rings, so what they do is, like, they set up tatamis and karate or taekwondo dojos, and it kind of reminded me a lot like that, just guys going at it and being penalized if they leave the circle or a square. So I like the format a lot. I don't think it's barbarism or anything like that. I thought it was really exciting.
I want to see what happens, though, Amilcar, if a guy that is a pure boxer who has no other options gets in there. Because, again, was this more about Vera and Rosado being great dance partners, or does the format really accentuate offensive boxing?
I'd like to see them get a hold of some young prospects, too, and develop a guy in this within this system. It's fairly interesting to watch. I mean, because it's there's no real rest, and so they're just going at it. And the conditioning that you need, I mean, the Estrada fight in particular, I mean, it was fairly unbelievable how we got to the third round. After the third round, I was like, Jesus, it's only the third round. They had thrown so many punches. You're just going at it constantly. And like, the main event was the same thing. So I like it. I don't know. I want to see more of it. But I'm curious to see if this is just like, you know, kind of like where aging fighters go, or is this something that you can develop a young fighter and develop a star in this system, or is the system the star?
Well, I think a lot of that will come down to whether or not the records count, right? I think last week you said that the records don't count.
Well, no, but then Fight News said that Fight Facts was going to count them. And, Gabe, you went through this. You were told up and down for a year or two the World Series of Boxing records will not count. Guess what, Gabe? They did.
Almost just disappeared, man. It was like, that was a story that dried up real fast. Everybody was overseas, and all of a sudden nobody was answering emails. They counted on all these guys' records. And it's interesting that sometimes, depending on what network they're on, sometimes the records do show, sometimes they don't. But, I don't understand how they even thought that was going to – if you're getting paid and you're under the commission's, you know, sanction, or they're under their care and they're using all the normal refs, of course it's going to count. And it should.
Whoa. Okay. Did Amilcar just drop from us?
No, I'm still here. I'm still
Whoa.
Here.
Whoa. Okay. All right. Amilcar, anything else we could do for you?
Yeah, two quick things. The first, I was going to ask you, what's up with the fight game with Jim Lampley?
The fight game's coming back
HBO
in...
Go and...
All right, here's what's going on. It's coming back mid-September, and it'll go monthly till the end of the year.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. As always, I really appreciate the show.
Absolutely. Amilcar, join us anytime. Thank you for the call. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
585. You're live on the next round.
Hey, guys. I got two questions. One is, you know, with Jay-Z's now entrance into boxing, I don't know, he doesn't seem to go at any of his ventures like half-assed. He's already picked up the Quillen-Korobov fight. I mean, do you see him looking at the boxing landscape and thinking, you know, half of the world-class fighters in the sport are unsigned to any promoter? I mean, basically. Maybe I can come in and snatch up some of these guys.
You know, what's interesting, and we want to reference what you're talking about here, Jay-Z's company, Roc Nation, won the purse bid for the WBO middleweight title between Peter Quillen and Sergey Korobov, with a bid, or Matt Korobov, with $1.9 million, which is this astronomical offer which stunned everybody. Here's what I think. I think it's an interesting development because I get the sense, Gabe, and maybe I'm wrong, this will not be a repeat of 50 Cent. This guy might actually try to make a legitimate run at being a player.
Oh, I think so. I mean, the hiring someone like David Itzkowicz,
it says, you know, they're serious. They want somebody that's got, he's got like near 20 years experience in the sport. People think highly of him. He's got contacts and he brings a lot to the table. Getting a guy like that says that you care to know what the landscape, you know, is really like. My question is, I mean, they're an sports entertainment company. Are they managing people, or are they going to be, because they have their promoter's license, can you do both of those things?
Well, that's interesting. Hey, listen, Al Heyman's basically an advisor and promoter, isn't he?
I mean, I think even like the smaller, you know, promoters, I mean, all of them, I think in some sense, Bob Arum and Top Rank, they're generally guiding the careers of the guys, not necessarily the managers. The managers are kind of just paying attention to the fighters' needs and taking what the market will bear, which is what the promoters decide. That's why I always think like the transnational ratings and all that fantasy stuff is just a bunch of hoo-ha, because it's just not really how the sport works.
You know, what's going to be interesting, guys, is who is going to televise this fight. I don't think Showtime's going to get it. As soon as Al Heyman did not win the purse bid, I think it left that network. Is HBO willing to pay that price tag for a fight that really I thought they overpaid for? If you talk to everyone in the business, they'll tell you that fight was probably worth no more than $750 to $1 million. And even Al Heyman came in at above $1 million. He didn't come close to winning it. And then second of all, here's another thing that I've been told by everyone in the business that I respect. Jay-Z does not like Al Heyman. Now, I don't know if that has anything to do with the past of his wife, Beyonce, who, you could look it up, sued Mr. Heyman and his father for basically the money not quite being there several years ago. So are we going through now another shifting alliance as it relates to boxing's ever-present Cold War?
Hmm. That's a good question. Yeah, he's an interesting player. I get the sense that he's not just on a whim. I think Fitty got kind of left twisting in the wind. I think he really thought that him and Floyd were going to do something, and then that just didn't happen. And he got stuck with all these fighters. I think in this case we'll see. But to me, that's the question: is are they going to be managing these guys? I mean, it seems like they're going to be, you know, watching their career all the way down the line, promoting them all year round. But is that promoting or is that managing? And
right,
it doesn't
and,
really
but they
matter.
Did hire David Itzkowitz. That is a solid, experienced boxing guy. So in that respect, the fact, like, you know, Mike Tyson Productions, they hired a guy like Chris Middendorf. When you get solid boxing guys and you put them on the payroll and you give them real responsibility, that right off the top shows me you might be serious about that business. 50 Cent never really gave that indication, other than the fact he was going to do the ring walk music for several of his fighters, which which never really meant a hill of beans to me. Gabe, let's go through some news and notes here again. We're here till 6:30 on the next round. The Mayhem undercard has been set underneath the Mayweather-Maidana rematch for the IBF lightweight title. Mickey Bay takes on Miguel Vasquez. Leo Santa Cruz takes on Manuel Roman. Then Alfred Angulo makes his middleweight debut against James De La Rosa. And then here's the ironic part, Gabe. The best part of this undercard, which is actually going to be on the Countdown live show on Showtime, is Johnny Molina versus Humberto Soto. Gabe, I got to tell you, based on public reaction, this is not a very popular undercard on September 13th.
Why would it be? Yeah, it just... it's just like, come on. I mean, you know, Miguel Vasquez is just a tough style on his own. And, you know, Mickey Bay is actually a quality fighter, and it's the kind of fighter that you almost want against a Miguel Vasquez. Because he's got good wheels. He could punch on the move. He's hittable. I mean, he's stoppable. So I think that fight could end up being a little bit more than what people think it is on paper. You know, Leo Santa Cruz is always fun, but it's interesting to do that kind of fight. To do that fight, I mean, it's his co-main, like he's shaking off all this rust. It's just a weird undercard, you know. I don't really understand it. But Johnny Molina, I think that should be interesting. That should be a fun fight.
Yeah, and Leo Santa Cruz, you know me, Gabe, I've been one of his biggest advocates. In fact, I drove the doggone bandwagon. Gabe, I'm going to say it right now, I'm getting bored of this. He is now becoming that Al Heyman scholarship guy, isn't he?
Becoming, yeah, he's been in for a while, I think. You know, it's a shame. I really thought, you know, I mean, they're showing him on cable, the other night, and they're asking him about his next opponent, and he's like, well, you know, that Manuel Roman, and he's like, yeah, we used to spar, and in sparring, I would, you know, it'd be tougher the on. He's tougher the on, and then I'd figure him out, and I'd break him down. But great. So, like, let's pay $70 to see that. You beat up on your sparring partner. Yeah, I mean, dude, what are they doing?
I'm not saying he should ever fight Guillermo Rigondeaux because that is going through the wood chipper. I mean, that would be, quite frankly, Ted Williams not only hitting slow-pitch softball, but maybe off a batting tee. Fine, I get that. But it's time now that he steps up to face a Scott Quigg who's more than willing to come out to the United States, be an excellent fight. Frampton, whether he wins or loses his next fight against the guy he's facing, Kiko Martinez, which would be another fight I'd like to see. There are fights out there. The free ride is over. Stop being the little Mexican version of Andre Berto, because when even the Kimster is bored, you know that they've now crossed the line. Gabe, here's a tweet. Hey, Steve, we all know you put stock in Felix Verdejo. By the way, good quality 8 rounds this past weekend. How much stock would you put in young prospect Lavgen Kitrov? Gabe, we saw him in Pittsburgh a couple of weeks ago. This guy looks like he has an upside here. Gabe? Come on.
I think the power's real. I think the durability, you know, is what I want to see. You know, I want to see him get punched a bit. But I think that guy, I want to definitely see more of him, no doubt.
Power-punching guy. I believe he's 6-0 with 6 knockouts. And in talking to some of the people with Tyson, they have a plan for him, and they absolutely believe he will be one of the pillars of their company alongside the Who Can Mexican, that the guy out of Monessen, the Sammy Vasquez, and also, of course, Erickson Lubin. Gabe, let's get to the calls, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on deck?
In the 787, you're live on the next round.
Oh, my God, it's Danny Garcia's number one hater. What?
No, hold on. There's like 5,000 people that have that distinction. Which one are you?
All right. Yeah. You know, it's the only Puerto Rican that hates Danny Garcia.
You know what's amazing? Here's the thing that got me. And Carlos Acevedo had a great nickname for Danny Garcia. He called him Danny, yes, I'm really Puerto Rican Garcia. The fact that before his last fight with Salka, which was in Brooklyn, they ran that vignette again of him going back to Puerto Rico. And I'm saying to myself, would you stop selling that? The Islanders simply don't accept him. Get off of that.
Yeah, he's not selling out here. We ain't falling for that. Well, some people are. Some people are. Some people have fell off the Juan Manuel Lopez mountain and, you know, landed on the pebble that is Danny Garcia, but that's going to get sucked away by
the Puerto Rican, and you really don't like Danny Garcia, huh? I find that interesting.
No, I was raised on Carlos Ortiz, Hector Camacho, so I can't mess with Danny Garcia. His dad is funny. His dad is funny, but him, I just can't. No. But speaking of dads and sons in boxing, Sean Porter, what? Made me look like a fool. My boxing predictions are equal to that of Eli Manning's interception ratings in football right now.
Wow. Oh, yeah. or they're lower than a completion percentage this preseason. That's going to be another issue. It always crops up that anytime a father-trainer duo has a tough night, Gabe, we've covered this sport long enough. You know what the number one question is? Do they need a new trainer? Right? Isn't that invariably the question that's asked next?
Well, that's anybody that loses, you know, anybody that loses, all of a sudden start looking around and, well, not my fault, I'm a badass fighter. Whose fault is it? But, you know, I think, you know, those two are fused together, and you could see it when the scores were announced and the way they just were within each other, you know, just in their own world. And even when they came out, kind of touched foreheads and just smiled at each other and prayed together before the fight began. I think it's going to take more than a loss, a closely hotly contested loss, but they can break down and go, you should have done this, you should have done that. That's going to be a brutal skull session with Kenny Porter. kind of want to be there for it, kind of don't want to be there for it. But I think those guys will stick together and go back to the drawing board.
I want to put something out there for boxing right now. I want to, I, you know, I don't want, you know, we saw Roy Jones, what happened with Roy Jones and his dad. We've seen it before where fighters kind of just, their relationship deteriorates with their father. They put the blame on him. They want to be better fighters. They want bigger fights. You know, there's all types of situations that have happened over the course of boxing's history where father-son relationships have just gone terribly wrong. I want to put this out there. Why not have strategists in boxing? I see a lot of fighters go in there, they train, sure, but you see these guys, they're giving horrible advice in the corner. They're kind of just, you know, typical example, Kelly Pavlik, Bernard Hopkins. That was a terrible advice in the corner. We need a strategist, somebody who understands the fighter.
Yeah, they do have strategists. Theoretically, it's supposed to be your trainer.
Yeah, a lot of guys don't take that job, though. I mean, it's like they train you to get you in shape. And these fighters, a lot of fighters, and this is why I admire what Kell Brook did, and I'm not upset that my pick was wrong, because for the first time in a long time, a fighter did homework. For the first time in a long time, a fighter corrected his errors going into a match and really adjusted and had multiple game plans and was prepared for multiple situations, whereas 90% of the time I don't see that in fights. And you just see guys going in there with what they have, going in there with this training that they did, and they don't get any advice in the corner, and partially because they're so used to being successful, when they come across a crossroad or a tough match, they don't know what to do. And I think that boxing needs to separate the trainers from the strategists, and we really need a rise in strategists right now. We need guys that are going to come in there and break it down to a science.
Well, I think also it's a little bit of, you know, styles make fights. And, again, it's like you can't just throw everything out. I don't think Sean Porter's, you know, a terrible fighter because he had trouble with a pretty damn good boxer, the guy with a solid amateur background, you know. But I hear what you're saying, you know. You know, a lot of it, too, is just Sean, to me, the way I looked at this fight was that it was a proving ground for both guys. We're going to see, you know, what the sum of those wins were. What was Paulie Malignaggi really? Was he ever really a welterweight? He picked up titles, but he didn't win a gauntlet up there. It was very carefully crafted. It's kind of like the end of Gotti's career. And, you know, kudos to him. You know, good that he could make some money and get some titles, but it's not the same thing. And I think, you know, Sean for the first time met a pretty big welterweight, you know, good size, natural welterweight. In terms of his height, it was just a problem for him. But you know, I'd love to see him fight Tim Bradley if there wasn't, you know, the Cold War. Porter Bradley would be a rough and tumble,
brutal
fight. Oh, God,
the headbutt in there.
And let me just point this out. In the past, there have been certain trainers, namely the likes of Angelo Dundee and Emmanuel Stewart, who have been brought in to troubleshoot. I mean, the secret is with Dan Dundee, Hall of Fame trainer, impeccable credentials. He didn't necessarily train Ali and Leonard day-to-day for 2 months. He would actually come in late into the camp, set a game plan, troubleshoot, and then work the corner. Emmanuel Stewart did that a lot later in his career. So it's not uncommon, but again, your trainer who's there with you every day, he is the guy that's in charge of watching the tape, breaking down your opponent, and then setting a game plan. So I don't know. Do we need more people to have their hands in the pocket of a fighter? I'm not sure about that.
Who's that?
I just want to – I wanted to almost say I do agree with you guys. Besides that point, Sean Porter, I think Sean Porter, I'm going to put 100% blame. From experience, me being a short fighter, I'm going to put 100% blame on Sean Porter for the clinches. If you're a short fighter, you need to know that there is a very specific range you can work with before you're smothering yourself and before you're too far out of range to do any good work.
Right.
And Sean Porter that night was not using any setups. You know, that second phase he went into when he was moving around the ring and they were talking in the corner, oh, you're setting the trap good. There were no damn traps being set, okay? he was trying to just use his athleticism and explode randomly and catch Kell Brook sleeping.
You
didn't work.
Let me just say this. If Sean Porter was a wool blanket, he could have put out a forest fire with the way he was smothering on Saturday night. That's how bad he was in terms of gauging his own distance and spacing. Listen, we got to get going, okay? Thanks for the call.
Yeah, man.
And WEPA for Danny Garcia. Gabe, you know what I thought was the best fighter I saw this weekend? Who I thought put on the best performance? Denis Shafikov. Now, that's an exhibition of professional boxing and punching and counter-punching, going in and out, laying traps, punching high and low. I thought he was excellent on Friday Night Fights against Rustam Nagaev.
He was, dude. He was a dangerous little fighter, man. The way he was able to get in and get out, it's a southpaw bandit. The whole night, you know, it was kind of like a slow start with him, too. He was a little bit like a sniper, kind of finding his range, you know, setting traps, but just kind of gauging, you know, and kind of handling the onslaught, too, of Nagaev, just who kept kind of rushing in, letting his hands go. You know, there's something about Friday Night Fights, though, you know, it gets me. The whole Teddy Atlas thing, does he have to talk every second of every round? Is that like in his contract or something? It's hard to really watch those fights. You have to, like, tune him out because he doesn't really call the fights. And I thought it was a pretty fantastic fight. And that early on, Nagaev seemed to have the size advantage, but Shafikov had to figure out what to do with that, and he certainly did. It was a tactical, brutal fight.
You take away Miguel Vasquez, who just bored him to death back in February, and Terrence Crawford, ultra-skilled, very tall. I think Shafikov at 35 is hell for a lot of guys. And Gabe, Andre Berto, looks like September 6th on Showtime, he's going to be fighting Steve Upshaw Chambers. I guess he's still on that Al Haymon scholarship.
I mean, okay, you know, you need a get-back opponent. That's fine. But why are we seeing it then? You know what I mean? Like, why? I don't understand, you know? What?
Gabe, let me make this point to you. And Austin Trout went through a year where he went from Miguel Cotto, beat him, was even neck and neck with Canelo Alvarez, and then had a bad night against Arizona Lara. But that's a hell of a three-fight stretch. And he's on ESPN2 this weekend. Obviously, not all Haymon fighters are on the same level as it relates to his totem pole.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Alberto's kind of an early-on guy. So, I mean, and he, you know, he held that title for quite a while, longer than Porter has ended up holding his. But at the same time, yeah, I just don't really understand it. It is kind of strange. But he's also – maybe they just believe that he's got something left, that he's got – enough power. He's always in action fights, whether he's losing or winning. But it just seems strange. I don't know. We'll see. I'm curious to see what he has left. I mean, I ran into him a long time ago, last summer, in Los Angeles, or the beginning of the year, rather. It was like January. I ran into him in Los Angeles. And he seemed to be beginning his training camp. And he likes Virgil Hunter, likes working out up here. We'll see.
Gabe, we got room for one more call. Pick a winner.
Let's see. In the 646, you're live on the next round. 646.
Yes.
What is
this?
Yeah, this is Mike from the Bronx.
Mike from the Bronx, you got
what's
about
up,
two
Mike?
And a half minutes.
Quick. I didn't get a chance to hear the show, but I just wanted to make a comment on the Jose Wonderboy Lopez Robert Castaneda fight. Did you guys
see that
fight?
What a great first round, and I thought there was Puerto Rican home cooking for the Wonderboy. That fight should have been stopped.
Yo, that was – I've never seen – I mean, I've seen some bad refereeing in Puerto Rico, and I'm Puerto Rican, so I'm not hating. But I've never seen a guy get knocked down and receive his count while sitting on the stool in the corner. I mean, have you ever seen that?
And here's another thing, Mike. I think that was Roberto Ramirez. Now, wasn't he the guy that Juanma accused of gambling after the first Leo fight?
I know who
he bet on this fight this past weekend.
I mean, this guy, this kid Lopez, he was throwing low bowls, rabbit punches, punching after the break. I mean, I've seen bad refereeing in Puerto Rico. They always lean for the home guy. Come on. I mean, none of the commentators want to even broach the subject. Like, the guy's sitting on his stool getting treatment from the corner and getting his 10 count. Like, unbelievable.
You know,
it reminds me of
that old line from Take Me Out to the Ball Game. And you know what that line is, right? Root for the home team. Because if they don't win, it's a shame.
God.
And I don't think there's any doubt that was some Puerto Rican protection there on Solo Boxeo.
Oh, yeah, with some sazon, adobo, and some sofrito on top. Let me tell you one more thing.
Yeah.
I wanted to know. I know Adonis Stevenson got moved off the date that he originally wanted coming up because Showtime wouldn't approve the opponents that they were trying to get for him since the Hopkins fight was now out of reach. Who were those opponents? Would you happen to know?
Well, Adonis Stevenson, there was a name like Savigny, who's with Mike Tyson and Artie Palullo, and the fight that I kind of was interested in was Gable Campillo. And for some reason, I believe that date has gone by the wayside. So Adonis Stevenson, Gabe, I think the option is we got to get going here is going to be Jean Pascal by the end of the year or early next year. All right, we got to get running here. That's it for the next round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya, to the next round, goodbye, everybody.